Jeremy here. Just before we get into the show, wanted to give an update. We have a new tier on our Patreon. That is the Sheikah supporter tier. For $5 or more a month, you get a week early access to episodes, as well as getting to pick games that you play alongside us. Each month, people in this tier can pick a game that we'll play. We'll stream it on our Discord for everyone else to see. And it's been a lot of fun. We just played the Rogue Hero Ruins of Tassos game, which is this roguelike, Zelda-like game that is very similar to the old Four Swords games. It's very chaotic. It's very, very fun. If you want to join up in that, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. If you can't afford that, we do still have the smaller tier. Just a reminder, people that join in that tier, they get ad-free episodes. They also get access to our side quests episodes, where once a month we record an episode just talking about all the other games that we have been playing. You also get to pick the games that we play in between Zelda games, what we call our Gaiden games, as well as getting a shout-out. If that sounds good to you, once again, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. Sign up, support us. We really appreciate it. Anyways, that's all I have, so let's get on with the show.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this episode, we're not talking about a Zelda game unless one of us happens to have it on our list, because we are talking about the games of the year for 2021. I'm Jeremy. We've got BC.
Hey.
And we have Brian here.
Salutations.
If you hadn't heard our game of the year last year, the way we do it is a little bit differently. We are not going to decide the one game that is the best game. We're also not going to be restricted to games that came out this year. The only rule we have is that you can't bring up a game again. If you did it last year, you can't bring it up this year. So we've got ourselves here. We each brought five games, as well as an honorable or dishonorable mention. And we're going to close it off with, we'll have three movies, three albums, and three podcasts that we think you should also check out from this year. Well, whatever. It doesn't matter.
I kept mine current. So,
let's just jump into it. So let's start with some honorable, dishonorable mentions, whichever it is. BC, get us going here.
All right. So my honorable mention is going to be Divinity, or Divinity 2: Original Sin, I should say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
That is my number five.
Oh, okay.
Earlier this year, we spent a lot of time together just in the middle of lockdown playing Divinity, and it was a ton of fun. We only got through, we were in the middle of the first real chapter. We got off the tutorial island, and then we went to the next island, and we ended up stopping because, things picked up, people went back to work, life got in the way. But that was just so fun to play and to just, walk around pickpocketing people and setting people on fire with your friends. Good fun.
Whether you meant to or not.
Yeah.
guys, I did something bad over here.
Right. It was just always so fun not knowing what was going to happen, because I love the potential chaos in that game. Mm-hmm. There were so many times that I was doing things just to keep it fresh, and not telling you guys what was going on.
Yeah.
And I could just do that. Like any one of us could be playing like this, our game in a certain direction. At some points we do kind of have to we all need to go here or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there were these breaks in between where we'd get to a town and we would just split off in all different places. We'd talk about all these things. And then someone would be like, oh yeah, I met this person here and this thing's going on. And I'd be like, and I intentionally made myself clueless to a lot of the stuff that was happening just to keep myself as just to make myself more of a wild card.
Right.
I feel like I would always come in. Yeah, I would come in like when we were fighting, I was like, all right, I'm going to be very clear what I'm doing. I'm going to be as strategic as possible. I'm going to let everyone know what I think we should be doing and all of this.
Dropping totems left and right.
Yeah, as soon as it opened up to be like, okay, you're free to make your own decisions and do all this, I was just like, peace. I don't care what you guys are going to do from here on out.
That's that has a lot of it's some of the best, as far as the battling goes, some of the best and most faithful RPG, like Dungeons and Dragons, like pen and paper style fighting that I've ever played, because there are systems upon systems, and I've played with DMs that don't know what they're doing, and I've played with DMs who know way too much of what they're doing. And Divinity is like a DM who knows everything, and you know,
but they aren't jerks about it, right? They still like
but jerks. And so like when you put out a fire, and that you put out a fire with water, and that gets steam, but there's an electrified something or other in the corner, that means the steam turns into an electrified cloud of lightning steam, and you know, a good DM would know that sort of thing, be like, guys, you weren't paying attention to the tiny thing in the corner, and everyone in the room goes, oh no, what have we done? But I don't think that out of battle, when you're just moving around the world, it's tougher to let you do whatever you want the way that you do on a, you know, pen and paper role-playing game, where you can just basically anything you can imagine you can do, and a video game has more restrictions because, of course, it does.
I can't romance every single person I come in contact with.
Right.
I can't even attempt to do it.
Right. You know, and it can't sit there and, you know, like Chessmaster 3000 and go like, I guess that's a perception check if you want to try that or something, you know. So it's limited in out of battle, but in battle it's some of the most comprehensive systems that I've ever encountered, and it's such a fun game. So yeah, that's my piece on it. I don't know,
BC, this was your pick, so
yeah, sorry,
I'm gonna leave the rest to you.
I agree with Brian. I just had a lot of fun playing it. I'm going to go back to it at some point and maybe just do the solo campaign or something. So, yeah.
I'll get in contact with Donnie. We should try playing that again.
I figured it's probably going to be a thing where we got to wait till like the next Baldur's Gate game, because the people that are making are doing that, and it's going to have the same kind of multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where I'm like, well, I don't know. That's probably when I'll be able to find time to do it again, because at this point I'm like, I think I need to start over with it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't remember any of the stuff on there. And
that happened a lot with that game, where each time we came back together to play it, our first battle was a mess because we'd be like, wait, how do I? Oh, that's right. There's an order of operations to everything you have to do, and if you screw that up or you do something out of order, you accidentally like, I'm gonna run here, and then you attack a bush because it was you had attack on and not move on or something. And so,
or how many times I had to tell Brian, stop healing me, I'm undead.
Yeah, kind of that sort of thing. So, right. That's a fun game.
Are you done with yours, BC?
Yeah, I'm all wrapped up.
Okay. For my honorable mention, originally I put the new Ratchet and Clank on there, but I was like, people know enough about this stuff. I don't want that to be my honorable mention in this thing. So I went with Grow Song of the Evertree. Game, okay. I talked about on last month's Patreon bonus one, but if you didn't hear that, this is a game that is just a super casual, friendly life sim style game where you just you can make your character look however you want. This time around, they also like their previous game was called Yonder the Cloudcatcher Chronicles. And that was a similar kind of thing where it was just you didn't fight anything. You couldn't take any. It's not you didn't get damaged by anything or anything like that. But you went around mining, collecting things, growing vegetables, crafting stuff, getting things for people, getting people to move to a place, building a house, all this stuff. But it was real, real simplified. This one, they really overhauled the town building mechanics. You can just freely move houses wherever you want. I've been playing that like Tetris game of just trying to like be able to fit as many as I can in a corner to be as like efficient with it as possible. But everything takes like certain types of materials, so you got to go and harvest those. It's just this like good fun cycle of like you go and grow things, and they even do it where it's just real generous on the materials too. You don't have to worry about like, oh, I ran out of seeds and all this stuff. They don't even like their money is like different because they have a couple different currencies, but it's not even a big deal because like there's just one currency that just exists in one of these little special dimensions that it's not a big deal. Like none of it is like paid currency. But then you have your like main one that you get from doing all these things. They're just real generous with it to be like, yeah, here's some more. Here's all this. You did that. Did here have some funky glasses that you can just put on your character. It's just a really nice chill game, and I've been loving my time with it. That's why like it came out a week and a half ago from this recording, and it's just the game I've been wanting to play the whole time. Like once we get done with this recording, I'm gonna go back and play for a couple more hours.
It's refreshing for a game to have one type of currency.
Well, I mean. It's got multiple. I just said that.
Okay. Sorry. But there's one type that's off somewhere. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. It's just sort of like not a big deal. It's just constantly giving you things. And there's just a lot to do. It's a gorgeous game. Like there's a great use of color in it. They go just like crazy. Like I made, so the way that the game works is basically you're on this tree. Like this is a giant, think of like a, what is the mother tree or whatever?
Yggdrasil?
Something like Yggdrasil. But everything is living on this, right? And it has withered, and you were the last one that was left, and it's up to you to get rid of the withering, which are like these nasty roots that are just surrounding the thing. And you can create seeds that create giant land masses on the branches. And it lets you just sort of create your own seed by mixing different elements together. And there's all different elements to collect. It's just real. There's nothing that is like, you have to do it this way. It's just sort of like, yeah, mix whatever you want together and we'll see what happens. And it does mix it up in some weird ways. My favorite island that I've made so far is this weird thing where there's just like eyeballs all over the place. And they're like moving and blinking and stuff like that, like in the rocks and in the plants. And the trees are like have these giant mouths with teeth in it.
And they're all just
farting all the time.
And then you put beautiful Technicolor glasses on them and give them rainbow haircuts. And
yeah. And that's the video perfect game, man. And it's just cool. It's like it doesn't really ask a lot from you. There's always like a goal. It always says like, here's a goal to do it, but there's no time limit on anything. It's just do it however you want. You can spend all the time you want decorating your towns, or just going around and exploring and finding caves and solving these little puzzles. It's just really simple, but it's just a real fun game to play. And I wanted to make them an honorable mention just because I don't think people are going to know about this game otherwise. I think it's gonna fly under the radar, and that sucks.
It does suck. Poor game.
Yeah. Brian, what's your honorable mention?
Well, I'm not allowed to repeat a game, so I can't talk about Remnant and Killing Trees because I got a PS5 and restarted that game, got the DLC, and played through all of that. I actually beat it for the first time. I have done way, 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 way more than I ever did on Xbox. Donnie and I spent a long time in that game. So I guess, I don't know. I could come up with something else. I played that Ratchet and Clank reboot. That was pretty great.
Okay.
You know, I liked it. That was my first Ratchet and Clank game. I guess my honorable mention is Sony's back catalog. I finally got a current PlayStation system for the first time in my life and got to play some classics that I've never been able to play before. And so that's been fun going through that stuff.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Like if you just jumped in at this point, and especially like what they did with the PS5, where you got all the PS4 collection or whatever they had.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many amazing games on
there. I've played through like half of Last of Us and half of God of War Reboot and, you know, half of a lot of cool games. I practically 100%ed that Ratchet and Clank reboot. I really, really, really liked that game. That was like a lot of fun. I'm a sucker for an over the shoulder shooting game.
It's solid, man. It is just solid. Like, it does everything so smooth in that game.
And just the amount of things to collect and things to upgrade, and I like making numbers go up, and even weapons that I don't really care about or use very much, I'm still like, well, let's I've got currency, let's throw it into this weapon and make it a little bit better. Maybe I'll actually want to use it now. But yeah, my honorable mention is my PS5.
That's cool. That's cool.
Show off.
Let me tell you about my PS5. BC, what's your number five game of 2021?
My number five is going to be Sukuna, Rites in Ruin, or of Rites in Ruin. Spent a lot of time with that at the beginning of the year. Basically, you play as this, you're this god of farming or agriculture, and you get kicked out of the town where all the gods live because of shenanigans, and you're sent to this island where your parents first met, and you're tasked with like revitalizing this island. So it's a half farming simulator, or half rice farming simulator, half dungeon crawler, and it's really fun. There's a lot of things going on. I feel like there's so many things that you could do to like optimize your gameplay that I never did, but it's got a good combat system, and like doing well in farming means you can make new foods that you can use to buff yourself while you're out in the dungeons exploring. And I don't know, it's got cute characters. The story isn't going to blow you away, but it's fun, and the characters more or less drive it. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that
is sitting on my queue.
But yeah, I guess I didn't know much about that game, but that brief synopsis of it is like, oh, yeah, I like all those things.
Mm-hmm.
I like mythology and rice and growing food and going through dungeons. And yeah, I like all that stuff. That sounds cool. I should probably look at that.
That's it?
Yeah, sorry.
That's it for that one? All right. So, my number five is Paradise Killer.
Oh, that's right.
I know. BC, is that on your list?
So, I think Paradise Killer is my number two, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this game... It is, I don't think this is a 2020 game. So this one didn't come out this year, but I did play it this year, like near the beginning of the year. It is a first person exploration investigation game.
Yeah. It's not exactly a walking simulator, but you do a lot of walking, and you do a lot of reading, and you do a lot of talking.
See, for me, I wouldn't even say it was like walking. I played it like a first-person platformer.
Oh, true.
Like,
true.
The way I jumped around, there's no fall damage. Like, you don't have a health bar in this. Like, right. If you fall into the water, you just get kicked back to some... Like, the worst thing is that you'll fall in the water and you'll be like, where is it going to teleport me back to? Because I was just trying to get to this guy here, and I jumped off a cliff to try to land at the pier just because that was going to be the fastest way for me to get down there. But yeah, that's how I played it, because there's a lot of collectibles to find throughout it.
And there's also upgrades, tons of movement upgrades. So yeah, you really do, in the end, have to play it like a platformer. One thing that I thought was cool is that as you're playing the game, it does a really good job of just rewarding you, even in small ways, for exploration. There are so many times where I, like, you know, you play a game and you kind of do the thing where you're like, oh, I want to see what's over here. And then you spend all this time getting to this point and you're like, oh, there's nothing over here. This is just empty space or background or whatever. But there were so many times where I spent a bunch of time, you know, jumping up this cliff or walking along this ledge, and you get there and it's like, oh, there's a little cool trinket or a little collectible or there's a clue to the greater story. So anytime I did anything, I felt like I was getting rewarded, which was kind of nice.
Yeah, for sure. It is crazy when I was first playing it, you get this currency that it's used for. So I still don't like the way if you fast travel, it costs that currency. And I didn't like that because there is just like a finite number of these things that you can find around there. Now, if you were holding them like I was and not using them for that, in the end, I did have a lot of currency left over even after getting all the upgrades. But there's also vending machines that you can find that give you sodas. And it's just sort of like when the first couple times you do it, you're just like, this is nothing. I just spent my currency on nothing for this, right? Because, but eventually, as you do that, something chimes in and it's just like, hey, thank you for buying all this stuff. I've got a secret thing for you if you go and do this here. And so it's like, it still was actually leading towards that. It does really want you to just like, yeah, spend your currency on everything that you can. Though I'm still, did you ever do the fast travel?
I did the fast travel a few times. When I started playing the game, it was after Jeremy. And Jeremy, when I went into it, he said, hey, do yourself a favor, don't fast travel, just walk around as much as you can. And I kind of understand why they made it that way, because if you just fast traveled everywhere, then you wouldn't find a lot of the little clues and little Easter eggs that are out there. And kind of the best part of the game is walking around and finally like figuring stuff out.
And just taking that world in.
Yeah.
Like, it is, the design of this island is bizarre, but in just the best ways, where there are times you go into places and you have no idea what this thing is going to look like. Even when they describe to you like what this building is, you'll like go into this area and just be like, what is going on here? Like it's this ornate, like, it's, I don't know, how would you describe this art style?
Yeah, it's like Lovecraftian opulence is almost how I would say.
Sure.
So there's all these shrines to, like fallen gods. It's all very pyramid based, oddly. But yeah, it's just a super lavish, like, it's literally paradise. That's the whole point. It's supposed to be paradise. So all the buildings are ornate and cool, unless you live in the crappy apartments that aren't ornate or cool, but everything else is pretty ornate and cool.
Right. So like the general premise of this world is that it is this island created by these gods to be paradise, but the system that they have put in place requires that there be blood sacrifices to open up, like, in order to, like, they get to a point where their paradise is not going the way it's supposed to. There's like some evil that's taking over, something's going wrong. And in order for them to sort of reset everything or like open up a portal to the next one, it takes blood sacrifice. So they've kidnapped humans, like people, brought them into here to live here up to a certain point until they're like, okay, things are going wrong. We're killing everybody on this island. And it's like we show up basically after the sacrifice, but before they were going to move over because something went wrong there. And so we will come across like a few ghosts of the people that were left by, but we'll also just hear things from like the notes that they left behind or something like that, of them just talking about like the sirens went off and everyone got in line to be murdered just so that the gods could be at peace. And even one of the gods, his ability is that he can read minds and he feels the pain of every person dying. And it's like, that is like part of, he has a role in all of this. And it is bizarre.
Yeah. And so another thing I like about the game is that legitimately everyone that you interact with is a bad person. So like Jeremy was saying, you're these people who were human, but now you're immortal and you have this cult and you're kidnapping these people to appease your god, like your gods, who they so they can resurrect. But you go through and it's like, okay, well, everybody on this island who's still left, because it's only the people who are these immortals, all of them are bad people because they're taking part in this thing, but you're still trying to solve this murder and execute justice, even though everybody's technically terrible.
Yeah. That's also just the most interesting thing to me that really, really makes this stand out, is that the ending for it is sort of open, where the end of the game is the trial, and you can start the trial at any time you want. So you can end the game sort of whenever you want. But it does this thing where it says, like, what is it? Separating truth from, what is it? What is the, they have a phrase, separating the truth from fact, I believe is what it is.
It's something they say all the time too. What is it?
Yeah, it's something like that. It's the difference between truth and fact, where like truth is what people believe to be true versus what actually happened. And it's up to you to figure out the difference between there and listen to everybody's stories and do all that. And, you know, you can have different outcomes. BC and I talked about this outside of all this a while ago, that he and I had the same outcomes. And we both believe we exhausted every thread we could.
Yeah.
So we're both sort of in agreement that we kind of had the, we both have issues with it, right? Like, I think we both feel the way. We're just like, man, that I don't feel good about some of these things, but that's the way it went, you know?
Yeah. And depending, and like Jeremy said, you can start the trial at any point. So depending on where you are, you can be like, oh, no, I think I know what happened. I think I've got the answers. And then, you know, 20 minutes later, you're like, oh, I don't have the answers. There's so much more here. The one thing I would say that I was critical of was, even though the music, I really enjoyed the music and like being able to go around and find new pieces of music, which the concept is playing over like the radio in this city you're in. There's like these voice clips that play every time you have a conversation.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
And they're not some of the, there's voice acting for some of the conversations, but a lot of times you'll just get, someone has a catchphrase that they say all the time. And they've got one or two catchphrases, and you know, you have to talk to these people over and over as you get more clues, and it's like, all right, we get it. Like, this is the thing you say.
Right. Yeah, I was worried at first because I need to point out, I absolutely love the soundtrack in this. It is so good. I've listened to that so many times. And so when you started to sing that, I was just like, uh-oh. But no, I completely agree with you, because you will hear them repeat the phrase back to back as you're talking to them. Because it'll, every once in a while you'll do it and it'll be like audio clip time. And then it just pulls one of the three or four that they have for this person. And then just, that's all you ever hear from them.
Okay.
But yeah, I do love this game. I'm so glad that I pulled the trigger on it and checked it out, because I don't think this is, it's one of those weird games that like, it came out last year, but almost nobody talked about it. And at a glance, I was just like, I don't know. I tried starting this game up once, and there was like, the movement in here sucks. But then I heard something, I think it was on like the Besties or something like that. They talked about it. And I was like, okay, that sounds really cool. So I'm going to give it another shot. And then I went hard on it. Like, it was just the only thing I played for, you know, I think I probably put in 15 hours into that game, something like that. But it's just so good. So with that, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? When we get back, we'll talk about more great video games from the last year, asterisk.
From our lives, the last
These year. Are the games of our lives.
All right, now that we're back. Brian, we already heard you number five, which was...
Divinity 2.
Divinity 2, yes. So what is your number four then?
So have we exhausted our number fives? I believe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause yes. That was yours. Okay. My number four is Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion.
Okay.
I really loved this game. I had a lot. I mean, it's got that kind of Zelda feel to it, but then I'm also a sucker for a, dystopia, you know, future, especially when you don't realize that you're in a dystopia right away, and you're just kind of like, doop de doo, I'm going through this world. I'm a little vegetable man. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. So
That's that good thing where it has, like, this cute motif, and then mm-hmm. eventually you find, the dark things underneath.
There's, like, blueberries that are like, I'm a blueberry! Ah! And you're like, this is adorable.
First of all, there's nothing cute about tax evasion. Second of all, this game is amazing.
If any cops are listening.
No, I'll tear it up right in front of them.
I just love the idea of, you know, you're all these vegetables, and, like, there's tax evasion, but you're like, what are taxes? Like, everybody's like, what is, like, property and income?
Mm-hmm.
And you're just all anthropomorphic vegetables.
But they're all trying to figure it out, and they're coming to, like, a lot of the same conclusions that human beings would, all pretty fast, because it turns out they may not have been here very long. And you find receipts and things for, like, you're in upstate New York, and there's a, you know, you're on a barn, and you're on a farm, like a farmland or whatever, and there's a farmhouse a little further to the south and stuff like that, and, you know, you start picking up on the little things. But yeah, like, someone gets sold a deed to the stump that they're sitting on, and they're like, woohoo, I own property, and, like, yeah.
What does that mean?
Good for you.
Did you know that they added free roguelike DLC?
I did not know that.
No, I didn't.
Yep.
Ooh.
So maybe there's a reason.
Is that on PC only? Maybe I did know about that.
No, I think it's on Switch too. I think they put it on all the stuff. I haven't checked it out myself. I just got some notification like a month ago about that.
Hmm. Okay. But yeah, it really gets to my my inner anarchy side, where it's just like, yeah, tear it all up, burn it down, man. Let's go, little turnip boy. Yeah, there's so much going on in that game, and I think it, I talked about it in our, because these, both my number five and number four game were games we covered on side quests, and I like the way it's sort of paced out, where you get a little bit of the veggie side, and you get a little bit of the like human past side, and you kind of see, like, you know, it paces it out well. It feeds you just enough to, like, keep you going, and then be like, oh, hey, I'm gonna learn about a little bit more over here now, and then we're gonna go back to what we were doing. And it's kind of, you know, it's a well thought out little world, and I enjoyed the 5 hours I spent 100%ing that game.
And speaking of 100%ing the game, it has a cool little feature where once you beat the main story, there's an area where you can go back, and basically they'll say, okay, go and check this thing, or go over mm-hmm. here and look at this, so that you can find the things that you haven't done. So if you want 100% it, you're not just wandering around the entire game trying to figure out what you miss. It literally tells you, hey, check over here. And thinking back to Oceanhorn 2, which we just played, it was like, you know, there's 52 collectibles. And
is that your number four game?
Absolutely not. No way. But yeah, you know, there's so many games.
Right,
like,
right.
There's tons of collectibles, and there's no way to know what you missed. And just for a game that's, you know, a fun 5-hour romp, it's really nice to have that.
Yeah, and there's like a there's a 100% level, but then there's also a level underneath that for full story completion that's just tear everything up. Because anytime someone hands you receipt, documentation, here's a book on how to you know, balance your checkbook, or a book to how to do your taxes, or a book on, you know, like anything, like, you got, these are, money's important, kid. You just, you tear it up right in front of them. And that's how you get 100% story completion, is by tearing everything up. But there's hats and
hats are great.
Fun things to find. And those don't count towards the main story completion. Those are just kind of on the periphery. But yeah, the game will also go, hey, you missed a hat back here. I'm like, oh, cool, thanks. Yeah, that's a good little game. And yeah, real quick, really, it's worth it. It's worth the time.
It's funny to, like, it's funny throughout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I have some criticisms about the gameplay itself, because I don't think you even mentioned that it's like a Zelda-like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of did at the beginning, but yeah,
okay. But yeah, it is, it's very simple in the gameplay. You're fighting enemies, but you just have really basic weapons to deal with them. Eventually you get like two or three other varieties of things to fight with, but there wasn't really a lot to it. But it was at least still a funny, world to take a part in.
I think, you know, the puzzles that they gave you, and the mechanics for, like, the ways that you solve those puzzles, they don't stick around too long. It could have easily just gotten boring and tiresome, but because the game's short enough and a lot of it is spent talking to funny people and, you know, running back and forth across the map, doing little things for them. The puzzles themselves are pretty quick. They're, you know, you don't spend too much time on them. By the time you might get sick of even doing them, or by the time that they would run out of interesting ways to implement those puzzles, you're kind of done and past it and on to the next thing. And so, yeah, just, you know, you hear a lot of games critics say, like, no, it was the right amount of length. Like, you know, the game was, it knew when to stop. It knew when to move on, or, you know, it was short and that was a good thing for the game. Like, it didn't need to be any longer than that. So, you could probably beat the game in 2 or 3 hours, but I suggest just hang out and look for stuff and find what you're looking for. Yeah, Turnip Boy, fun. Tear it up. Burn it down.
All right. BC, what you got for number four?
My number four, I think I'm going to defer until later, because I know it's probably on both of your lists, and that's Forgotten City.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, so we can talk about that later.
You can. It's my number four as well, so that's fine.
I want to talk about this game, so yeah.
Yeah,
I'm gonna let you open up, BC.
Yeah, I'm gonna start, because I am still very, I'm a few hours into the game, or an hour or two into the game, whereas Brian and Jeremy have both completed it. The game is just so weird. It's so weird and it's so funny. And Jeremy talked about it, and I think I made a note of it, and then he talked about it again later, and I was like, okay, I'll download this since Brian started playing it too, and I wanted to be able to talk about it. But you just play this guy who washes up out of a river, and
poor girl.
The lady who pulls you out of the river is like, "Hey, go find my friend." You go to find her friend, and you end up in this city that's like a Roman city where all these people are still alive, and it's technically paradise as long as you obey the golden rule. But no one knows what the golden rule is. Everybody just has all these assumptions. And so you're, one, trying to find the guy. Two, trying to get out of the city. And three, trying to figure out what the golden rule is. And
it's great that when you ask people, like, no one really knows quite what the rules are. But you can ask people all the same, you know, most of them, the first time you meet them, a few of the questions will be the same. One of them being like, "Hey, do you know how to get out of here?" And people will be like, "Dude, like, don't say that so loud.
Be chill,
why,
dude.
Is that bad? Like, we don't know, but, like, it seems
right,
like
they're watching.
Things can hear us, like, just chill, bro."
Or some people don't care. They're just like, "No, the golden rule," because there is a...
But just even asking how to get out of the city, like, strikes fear into people's heart. Like, "I don't know if that's a bad thing or not, but just don't, just be careful who you ask that to. Just be quiet."
Right.
Like, it's that kind of level of, "Oh, okay, cool. What's going on here?"
But I would say for, like, the most part, the game looks really good. The conversations and, like, the writing has been great. This is a super small thing, but something that I thought was awesome is that when you pick up a document or read something that you find, they provide a summary down in the bottom right corner. So you get this big text, like Resident Evil style document, and you can read all the way through it. But in the bottom right corner, it's like, "Hey, this person just wrote a letter to this other person to say, I had a nice time at dinner last night." Like, and not that I don't want to read everything, but it's great to be able to, like, look in the corner and say, "Okay, this is what I'm supposed to be taking away from this." And I can read in detail if I'd like. And then another thing that I thought was nice is that they have a lot of options as far as how text is displayed. So you can increase and decrease text size, add borders around to make things more visible or more legible. And so that was just kind of nice from a game where you're going to have to talk a lot and read a lot, is that, you know, they tried to make it more accessible. They tried to make it easier on the eyes. And I think the last thing I would say is the way that you do quests is really cool. Very reminiscent of Majora's Mask, except not a full reset. So yeah, that's all I'll say. I can take my my headphones out now. If Jeremy, you want to talk more?
Well, yeah, I think because BC hasn't even seen like the midpoint reveal of this game yet, so I don't necessarily want to spoil anything for him, but I do want to talk about some things. And so what I'm going to say is, even for our listeners. I'm gonna say honestly 10 minutes.
And before you go, BC, I do want to say, like, one thing, that the way I've been describing this to people is it's like a Fallout vault quest, but like if all the vault members were still in there, and you've got to, like, figure out, like, what happened in here, what is going on, you know, sort of thing.
What vault is this? What was the experiment for this vault?
That kind of thing. And it, like, that's heaven for me. That's all I want out of a game, because, you know, it is a Skyrim mod, and so it does aesthetically feel like that. You know, you're talking to people, you've got dialogue trees and stuff, you're zoomed in on their face, so it very much looks like a Fallout game or a Skyrim game. But, like, yeah, it really feels like you're in here and you've got to figure out what's happening, and it's really great for that. But yeah,
and I will say my one criticism so far before I jump off is the faces are a bit they hit that uncanny valley mark where, you know, the game looks really good and the faces look super realistic, but they still look off. So sometimes when you're talking to people, like their mouths are moving and their facial expressions are changing, but they're not changing like a real person's would. And they look photo, like they look realistic enough that it makes you uncomfortable. It's like if you walked up to somebody and they started talking and like doing robotic facial expressions. But other than that, really loving it so far.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say 5 minutes.
Okay.
We'll do five minutes.
Okay.
Text me when
I think that's gonna be
when enough. I should come back.
Yes, for sure.
All right. All right. Yeah, so, send me a message.
Okay. So for the listeners, I am starting a 5 minute thing. You can skip ahead. All of that. I'm gonna make a note in the notes and everything too, on when we're gonna be done.
All right.
Starting 5 minutes right now. Spoilers for The Forgotten City.
Okay.
So there is a point midway through this game that you get a reveal of like where you're at. And Brian, I just want you to like walk me through it. Like when you were told this, like even the way they do it, like, cause they don't even specifically say like, this is what's happening. They take you somewhere and they say like, point your flashlight at this thing. Let me explain to you what that is.
Yeah.
Who this person is that you were talking to earlier.
I didn't. And the person who does that is Equitia, who is kind of like the priestess, and she's sort of, I don't know, the moral center of the area. And I hadn't even really spoken to her. I had gone through the first cycle with the election, and all hell broke loose. And so I was trying to figure that out. And I ended up talking to like most of the people around there, and they all kind of have a similar thing going on. And I sort of started to suspect it, but she pulled me in there to be like, we're dead. We're in the underworld. Hey, did you notice how that person who pulled you out the river, you know, the river, did she have a hood on? And I'm like, oh, her name's Karen. It's not, Charon.
It's Charon.
It's Charon. Oh my God. Yes.
After last year, Hades being like our favorite game, for us to have the a game the following year taking place in the underworld with similar characters, it just blew my mind and all of that. And
because the part that she takes you to is where everyone else fell out. And so when you fall through there, you fall into the ruins in present day, and you walk all the way through the town, through the ruins, and come out on the other end. And then the other end, you have to go all the way back to even get to, I don't know, just the way it went forward and backward like that. And it was the first time I'd ever gone into the bath and seen the place where you drop in the, you know, not ruined. I was like, oh man, right. So good. It's so good.
And, you know, I don't want to, like, there's still so many other things to talk about, but I do want to point out, like, okay, so you got, like, the first ending and the last ending, right?
I got a second ending.
You got a second ending.
And I didn't mean to. It was more of a, because I go through these games where I'm, like, afraid to commit too hard to a thing. Like, I try to be kind of pragmatic about the way I approach these things. And so I'd be, you know, I will talk to someone, but I don't want to push things too far. And on the second ending, I was like, let's just, I'll humor someone for once. And it ended the game. And I was like, but that's not what I wanted to do. I was two steps away from doing the perfect ending. I just decided to humor the person, and it ended the game. And I was like, fine. I'll go back and do the real ending. But I was so close to actually getting it.
Yeah. So you go through all of this. And again, I don't even, if you are listening to this, and I still suggest you play this game, because I'm not even going to, I don't think we should talk about like the actual ending. But you do eventually find out like what's going on here. Why is this happening? What can you do to get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And that was still just like, though I will say, I think the actual ending was not nearly as cool as the journey to there.
No. But
I think it was kind of cheesy.
I think it was for me, because I seriously didn't know who to trust, even the whispers. And like, and I had so many. I had so many like working theories going through it, like what's coming from where, you know, because at some point you there are these golden statues lying around and there's someone who their theory is wrong, they set up, but the hypothesis is wrong, but the conclusion they draw is correct. And they've locked themselves away, and they're doing some experiment, and they end up being right. And so, based on that information, I'm like, okay, wow, that changes a lot of things about what these golden statues might be. And so maybe, you know, they're the ones whispering to me, or this is what's going on, or whatever. And so I made, like, having it all at the end, I was like, I want to know.
10 seconds.
Lay it all out, exactly what is happening. And know, without a shadow of a doubt, that that's what went down. So yeah, wave to BC. Tell him he can put his headphones on. BC, hello. Send him the massage. Cause I need to. I still got a few more things to go on here. Hi.
Back.
All right. I'm done spoiling things. This is my number one game of the year. I absolutely love this thing. It has a lot to do with how my year went, where you know, Civilization's kind of in a rough spot right now, and I've been like, you know, contemplating a lot of just the cycles of history that we go through and we keep repeating. And I've been going back and back, and I've been, you know, like back to classical era histories, you know, and empires and stuff like that, back into like Bronze Age stuff. Like I've spent a lot of time, relearning a lot of the, like, you know, ancient and classical empires and the histories around that and some of the mythology around it as well. And it's just kind of been the year I've had, man, where I'm just like, we're not gonna make it. No one ever makes it, sort of thing. Everything always goes to hell, and then we just do it all over again. And like, I don't know. So that's where I've been this year, in this kind of just stuck in the classics and stuck in, you know, Bronze Age civilizations, and this is just chock full of that stuff. And that's been my year. So this game, and like I said, it's a Fallout vault. It's one big Fallout vault. That's my favorite thing in the world. So to have a game that is Fallout vault and based on classical era stuff and other things that are happening around it, this is exactly what I wanted. So, you know, and maybe that, you know, hey, Hades was last year too. And so I've got a thing, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, this is I am surprised by like how all in I was in. I played this for like 8 hours on the stream yesterday and did everything. I wanted to know, what did you guys pick for your main character? What job?
Archaeologist.
I did archaeologist too.
Okay, me too.
Which,
hey!
Yeah, which I started playing the game and I was like, maybe I should have just picked a, what do you call it?
One of them is a soldier and he just has a gun.
Yeah.
Like you get to just go in there with a gun.
And I was like, I should have just done like that first so I could just go in and just start shooting people. Like,
America.
I didn't know, you know, like I didn't know if archaeologists, I was like, am I going to be wasting this? Because like a lot of this, I kind of know, like when they drop like what year it is, I'm like, oh crap, we're in Imperial Rome. Like we're post Caesar at this point, you know, or any of that kind of stuff. But I can't read Latin or Greek, so I'm glad I picked that, because if you pick archaeologist, it will translate graffiti or signage, mm-hmm. or things like that for you. And also, it wouldn't have given me the options to ask the questions I would have wanted to ask when they bring up like Prometheus or bring up like, oh, you know, it's like the, you know, the story of King Midas, and I'd be like, no, that's a bad thing. And the one guy's talking about it in a positive light. And if you pick archaeologist, one of the prompts is, dude, no. So I'm glad that was able to pop up, because there's nothing I hate worse than not being able to say the thing I want to say in a game, you know, or something like that.
I wonder if...
I like this game because I like games with Groundhog Day mechanics.
Yeah, true. All right.
Brian will spend 15 minutes gushing about it, and I'm just like, I like it when a thing repeats.
Yeah.
No, like, here's the thing. I'm going to just say this. This isn't part of it. I mean, this would have been my game of the year maybe like 2 years ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If y'all like this game, you should play the Sexy Brutale.
Okay.
It is very similar mechanics. It's not a first person game and anything like that, but it's a looping game with a really cool story throughout all of it. Excellent game. But yeah, this game is incredible. And it's like Brian was saying, this was a mod that someone made in Skyrim, and then they flipped it into their own like game that they could sell. And it's unbelievable. And I'm looking forward to whatever they get to do next.
Mm-hmm. It's unsettling. It's creep. I mean, also much like a Fallout Vault, like I'm creeped out constantly playing this game. And I love it. I love it, love it, love it.
So, Brian, so that was your number one. That was BC's and mine number four. What is your number three?
The free Astrobot game that came with the PS5.
That was a
sick little platformer. I had a blast.
Is that the VR game?
No, it's the sequel to it.
Yeah, and so yeah, like I said earlier, that I haven't had a PlayStation to call my own ever, you know. I've had, you know, like a PS2, but that was to play San Andreas, basically. That was the only reason I bought that thing. You know, I know a lot of these games. I know a lot of these things. I pay attention to reviews and, you know, listened to Giant Bomb for years and watched X Play for years and just... I know a lot about the games that have come onto the PlayStation systems, and so like getting a chance to just romp through all those worlds was fun. And also, that's a tight little platformer, and I love it. I love it.
It's really fun. It's still like the best use of the controller too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're a year in. We're a year into the system, and you know so.
Well, you know, we knew the shooting people would use that and stuff, or the racing stuff if there's a good mm-hmm. racing game out there. But it uses it's not just like, hey, when you drive, it's gonna the triggers
Rumble.
Are gonna the triggers are gonna shake or something. Like no, it uses the triggers, the force feedback or whatever it is, in very intuitive ways. And also, it's just the puzzling is fun. I don't know, but maybe not the rolling sphere ball stuff. I don't know.
I think it feels cool. I think that's probably my favorite feeling of all of them, is when you're doing that and you're just feeling the controller shake in different ways, and it just like it feels different inside of it.
For the different
like the mud versus the asphalt.
Yes,
versus,
exactly,
like, the smooth,
that. Yeah. It's like that. That's cool, but you know, I'm just. We tried that on the DS with rolling games and stuff like that. I was like, all right, you can try, or just like the mini games on like Mario 64x4 DS or whatever, and things like that, where you can try it again, I guess, if you want. You know, it's been a long enough time. Maybe give another go around, but I don't think it's. I don't ever think those work that well. But I mean, like, it just, everything else is great. The like the ice skating stuff, you know, when you're in the ice worlds and it's fun. It's really, really, really good. It was probably my favorite thing I played on the PS5 this year.
I loved the bow whenever you got that and you're shooting arrows with it.
Yeah, like that was cool.
because it does the gyro aiming, but then it also does the trigger stuff at the same time. Mm-hmm. And there's a good sync between those two types of feelings when you're playing with that. And I thought that was really neat.
Mm-hmm. That the little rocket buddy stuff where you've got the left rocket and the right rocket, and you gotta steer your way up obstacles, and like I said, just the controller, the shoulder button feedback is really, really great. And I wish more people would do it for cool stuff.
I mean, give it time. The problem is we've just had a slow release of PS5 games anyway. Stuff keeps getting delayed, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've been a Nintendo fan for long enough to know that nobody ever uses the cool stuff inside the controllers the way that Nintendo thinks people will, so.
Well, we know we're going to get another Astrobot game. We know that. So sure. There's that, at least.
I'll be into it.
BC, what is your number three?
My number three is Guilty Gear Strive, which I'm sure neither of you have played.
No.
So, for the listeners, Guilty Gear is a long-running fighting game series with a ridiculous storyline that makes no sense and is split across, like, fighting games and strategy games and novels and audiobooks.
These guys that made the Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yeah, it's from Arc System Works. So they made Dragon Ball FighterZ. They make BlazBlue, but they're known for kind of eccentric fighting games with weird systems and crazy characters. The Guilty Gear series, all the characters are kind of based off of music. So there's really great music. Everybody has cool themes. And I don't know, just really fun. It's over the top. They kind of redesigned how the game worked from the last few iterations to try and make it more accessible. And it was just a lot of fun. The servers were garbage, but they've been working on those. It took forever for the game to start up, and there were tons of memes about that. But it's just been really fun to get in there. Play a fighting game.
How many active fighting games do Arc System Works have going right now?
That is a good question. They've got
I'm sure that netcode is stretched thin.
Yeah, it's cause, so they've got Dragon Ball. They've got Guilty Gear.
Like BlazBlue.
They got BlazBlue, and I feel like there's another one in there that I can't remember. But yeah, it's got
probably
rollback
the
net
last.
Code, so it's that good.
The last Guilty Gear and last BlazBlue.
Yeah. So yeah, it works really well. When it works online, it works really well, and the characters are fun. And I played my first Guilty Gear game way back on the PS2. I've always played the same character, and so I tried a different one out for this. I used to play like Kai, who's essentially like the Ken of Guilty Gear, and now I play Potemkin, who's this huge dude with like pistons on his arms who jumps up in the air and does backbreakers on people. It's super fun.
Wants to kill the six-fingered man.
Yeah. And then there's a new story along with the game. And so it's weird because it's like a fighting game that has a story mode that's just a movie, essentially. They used to have like these like kind of procedurally, well, not procedurally, these branching story paths where you would like pick a character and you would go through these fights, and depending on how you won that fight, the story would progress differently. But now it's just, hey, you have watched this video about all these crazy hijinks that are happening. So it's just been fun. It's been great to, you know, Potemkin Buster some people into oblivion and to watch a bunch of crazy hijinks and see how ridiculous the story gets. So, yeah.
Nice. My number three for 2021 is Metroid Dread.
Woo!
Is this on anybody else's list?
No.
I did not get through enough, and what you were saying earlier, I got to the wide beam. That was where I ended last night. But what you were saying was true about the Emmy sections, where I was like, they were starting to grate on me a little bit, but I enjoyed like everything else. And but it wasn't like I didn't see enough of it. And much of what I did see was those sections. And I was like, I'm not going to put this on a list just yet. You know, maybe my list next year, because I'm going to keep playing it. But I got a few hours into it, so
I'm not the biggest Metroid 2D fan. I always have to preface this with this to make it like, this is why it's a big deal that this is on my list. That's just how good this game is. I love the 3D Metroids over the 2D Metroids, but this one, like Brian was saying, with the Emmys, you get into these rooms where they're chasing you down, and there are times that you get into there where you are just put into this corner that they can just one-shot you, and eventually they get some other things that they can do that make it even harder for you to get by them.
Yeah.
And there are these moments that are really cool when you take down an Emmy, and that part stays cool. But in order to get to that, you have to go through these sections where they one-hit kill you. And there's ways to get out of it, but there's times where you're underwater and things slow down and your timing is never right on it. And every time that happens, game over, retry.
Mm-hmm. At least they make you retry at the beginning of the Emmy room.
Yes.
And not have to go all the way back to your last save room or something. That was really nice. Also, save rooms are everywhere. And that's been really nice too. So I mean, I've seen people being like, I can't believe they still have the save room system in this game, and I'm like, dude, they're everywhere. And
the
Emmy room, it lets you stay outside that, you know, or start you back outside. I think that's an excellent way to do it.
Well, the best thing that they did is they also turned the map room and the Atom update room into save rooms as well.
Right,
so you have effectively three times as many save rooms as you would normally have in these, in a game like this.
And that's what I mean.
Great, it's you're going to want this.
Yeah, sorry. It's not that there's more save rooms everywhere, but more rooms double as save rooms. And so there are effectively more save rooms everywhere.
Yeah. And this game, I mean, it plays... My issues with the 2D Metroids have always been, I don't like the aiming in them. The way that they've always been played, you know, when you go back, like this is a sequel to Metroid Fusion, a Game Boy Advance game. Mm-hmm. And then that was before that you had Metroid 2 and Super Metroid, original Metroid, all those games. But this one is, it is made with a stick in mind, and you get that full 360 movement.
I hate
it. And it is so good. I love it.
I can't stand it. I'm constantly missing everything.
Then you're not playing enough. and like it is so nice to just be able to be like, I can point at something and I can shoot it and I can hit it exactly the way I want to. And I never got that. So this game, it is gorgeous. The sound effects are so good throughout it. I love the exploration they give you, because I 100% of the game, I didn't try to go for, I was disappointed with the rewards for beating the game, because in this one although technically it is kind of continuing what it did before, where all you get as a reward is a picture. You know, in the past, that's how those Metroid games would do it, where you would get to see Metroid and you would get to see Samus in some pose, right? And that was what you went for, was some cool art that they made for it.
I want to see,
and they have it on this as well.
I want to see a Metroid without any clothes on.
Yeah. And
just its mandibles hanging out.
Yeah. So that was disappointing in that, like, as soon as I beat it and I was like, I got 100% completion, all right, I'm going to delete the game. I wasn't pulled in to like do a better time or anything like that, because I just loved exploring that area. I just loved going through everything, because like I said, the game was gorgeous and it was just so much fun to run around in. A lot of those unlocks were really hard to figure out. And then when I finally got them, like there were so many times I was like, obviously I'm going to get an upgrade to be able to get this thing. And it was like, nope. Mm-mm. You had it the whole time. You had the ability to do that the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so when I get back to it and I'm like, oh, I can do this with that. I didn't realize that I could power up this way and move in this way throughout that. And it's just, it's really, really cool. And that game is so much fun to play. And just, it is one of the best games on the Switch.
I fought that, that blue, guy from the E3 demo, that first bad guy. And, oh, that was fun. Like, I kept missing, you know, from time to time. Like, I would just miss his head, you know. Like I said, I was having problems with the aim. But man, that fight, like, I got pretty far the first time in the fight. I thought I was going to get him in one go. And then I had to, the way it always is, you know, well, now I'm going to have to do it, like, 7 or 8 times. I know it. I'm never going to do that well again. But, yeah, by the time, like, I had it down to where I could, where I beat him, in very swiftly took him out. It just felt so good. It felt so good.
Not, you know, the last thing I'll bring up with it and then I'm done is that in the final boss, there, you know, I first few times I tried attempted to be to finish the game, it just kicked my butt. And I was like, I had that thought in my head where I'm like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to do this. I'm just like not able to do it. And then I didn't play it for like a couple days and then went back in and it was like, oh, I just went through the first phase like it was nothing. Like, and it's not like anything was different. I just figured it out more just being like, oh, I see what this I see what the game is trying to tell me now. I was like too tired before. I wasn't
you were too
paying
in
attention
it.
To little things.
You were too close. You had to step back.
And then got to that point again where I'm like, yeah, sure, I got through the first phase real quick, but I cannot get through the second one at all. And I have no idea what I'm doing wrong, and I can't figure it out. Went another day without playing it, went back, beat it. Like, the first, started the game up, beat it. And I was like, but it just felt so good. Like, I felt like I am a bounty hunter. Like, I am the best bounty hunter in space.
That was a
way
rule,
that thing.
Oh, that was a rule 8-year-old Brian discovered, which is okay, I need to leave this game for a couple days, go play a different game. I called it what was it, developing other skills. Like, oh, I can't beat this Donkey Kong Country game, well, I'm gonna go play Mario Kart or something and come back, and then I can slay this Donkey Kong Country level in one go or something. Like, oh yes, I need to develop my other skills elsewhere or something. But yeah, just taking a step back. Tibby even says that when she's programming, if she can't figure out why like a program won't work, she just puts it down, comes back the next day, and is like, oh, I see what's happening here.
But yeah, that's my number 3 game. Brian, what's yours?
I mean, I've only got one left to talk about, and if you guys want to.
How did that work out?
I'll go
which
number.
Which one did you?
You guys talked about.
What was your number 3?
Astrobot.
Number 3 was Astrobot.
Because he
I've started.
How
do
we get this order?
Left.
Oh, right. So now we're doing your number 2. Right. What's your number 2?
But you guys can go. Have we talked about your number 1s or number 2s yet? I can't remember.
No. That's all not right. The cycle we're going in.
I guess I'll just say nothing for the rest of the episode then. Fine. My number 2 is Pikmin. Like Pikmin.
Oh.
I played a lot of Pikmin this year. I played a lot of Pikmin 3 Deluxe this year because that came out, like I think at the end of last year. And I finally picked it up this year and had a lot of fun with it. I really like that game. I also played a little bit of Pikmin 2 this year and it's good. It's fine. But man, there's just nothing like Pikmin 1 as far as I'm concerned. I think it's perfect. I think that the 30 parts in 30 days, you have a time limit, get it figured out sort of thing is great. Pikmin 3, yeah, Pikmin 2, you can go underground and come out and like no time has passed. And it's really lax, and I don't like it. Pikmin 3, you are limited by how much fruit you can find in the world. Which, by the end of the game, I've got, like, I don't know, 60 days worth of fruit juice backed up. So, I've beaten the game, and I've gotten all the stuff, but I could survive another 60 days on the planet. I guess you're supposed to take it home to your friends, but whatever. Pikmin 1 is, you need to average a part a day, and only 5 of them are not necessary. And it's you and 3 types of Pikmin. I would like, maybe more guys, because I like the multitasking of Pikmin 3 a lot, where you can have 3 things going on at once, and that's really, really great. But there's just something so pure and perfect about Pikmin 1, where it's you and your 100 buddies and 30 days to survive and get off the planet. And I just love it. I love it. I love it so much.
All right. BC's number 2 was, what was that?
Paradise Killer.
Paradise Killer.
Okay.
BC's number 2 was Paradise Killer. My number 2 is Psychonauts 2.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
This game, it could have been my number 1, but I'll explain why my number 1 was my number 1. This game, so I loved the first Psychonauts. I was one of those people that, like, Brian has pointed this out before. I'm always the person that gets so excited about the game that nobody else played, and so I never get the follow up. I never get the sequel.
You also like,
I never
you
get
also
to
like
wrap up the story.
Sometimes you like
sure
weird garbage, which is fine.
Yes.
I mean, I think we all knew what Psychonauts was, and I knew plenty of people who loved that game, but. Yeah, that was definitely a cult hit, and you were definitely into the cult hit games.
You forget sometimes people throw good things away in the trash, and I'm sitting there in that trash waiting for it.
I'll go grab my copy of GoGo 13, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
the best thing about Psychonauts 2 is the fact that it's a good game. Like, it is a good video game.
Mm-hmm.
Psychonauts 1... mechanically was not that great. It was rough. It was a 3D platformer where the platformer was not as sticky as you want it to be. And so there was a lot of stuff, some really frustrating level design in there. In this one, they kept that weird level design, but they made a platformer that actually worked with it this time. And it's just so cool to go through here and using all your abilities that you get to collect all those things. It's a great collectathon. The game looks fantastic. Even they were able to keep their original art style, but then do it on modern hardware, and it doesn't look weird. Like, it still fits in its world, even with these characters with weird shaped heads. There's no similar design to these characters. They all look like they're molded from clay in some way, but it just all fits with it. But what it makes this really stick out, like, this could have just been a good 3D platform and it would have been fine, but the story itself is phenomenal. And I want to talk about some specifics on there. I'll say, you know, put another spoiler thing up, spoiler warning for the next 5 minutes. The things that it does, the way that it explains how someone could become a villain in a way that is realistic, that is human, that is relatable. There are 2 big villains in here that you don't actually like see yourself, that you know of, but you hear about them. And you get to know them in a way that you don't in other things, where like they start off as being the big bad. They're going to destroy the world. They're going to do all this and everything. And you're slowly learning about them, that when you finally have your confrontation with them, you feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done in a way, and it's all surrounding mental health. It's all dealing with stress. It's all dealing with, therapy in different ways. Like, their own thing is, like, the Psychonauts themselves are like therapist spies in a way. Like, the whole way that you deal with people in the world of Psychonauts is by going in their brain and fixing things for them and straightening things out and having them deal with their issues. And they make a video game about this. And there are things in here that they do. Your main guy that you are like trying to help through all of this, Ford Kroller, you learn about him and about his relationship with certain people and the things that he has done. Like it does it in a way where he feels guilty for things. And that's why he has put things away and hidden his memory in different places and all of that. And you learn things about him and his relationships that are like constantly just hitting you right in the feels in this like platformer game. And it is so well written and funny all through the beginning to end.
Tim Schafer's a fantastic writer.
And this is the first time that he's gotten the money that he needed to make the game right. You know? And it came out so well.
Were you saying Day of the Tentacle wasn't made right?
I never played it. but it's just a phenomenal game. You don't have to have played the first one to get into the second one. But I just would recommend it to anybody that likes anyone that would like a good story in a game and likes 3D action adventure games. Like this is one of the best. Let's see.
I'm glad that game finally got made because it deserves a sequel. I love Tim Schafer, and I've always wanted to play Psychonauts 1, and I've never gotten around to it. And yeah, I'm super happy.
It's worth going back to the first one even to try, because the stakes in the first one are like nothing compared to the second. Like it is a throwaway line, and it's really all it deserves. Like you kind of establish who your main character is, but in the grand scheme of like what's going on in the world of Psychonauts, it's not even really important.
I mean, it wasn't like it's just like I like Tim Schafer. I like the way he writes the, you know, and the things that he's involved with are usually pretty funny. Like Brutal Legend is a weird game, but man, it's funny. Man, I just like the way it goes. So,
and Jack Black's section in Psychonauts 2 is also phenomenal.
Yeah,
the way that they talk about the senses and how they it's so good. It's just so good. So Brian's number one was Forgotten City. BC, your number one?
Shin Megami Tensei 5.
Who saw that coming?
Yeah, and maybe a little premature to say that since I'm only like 20 hours in.
Only,
yeah. You barely
gotten past the tutorial.
I spent a lot of time in this game so far, guys. It's really fun. It's crisp. It's everything I wanted out of a Shin Megami Tensei game. I'm hoping that now that Persona has blown up, that they just have the budget to keep making Shin Megami Tensei games that are this good. And that like this one does really well. Graphically, looks great. There's some like quality of life improvements over other Shin Megami Tensei games and also over Persona that I really like. My favorite demons are in there. So all my favorite Personas, demons, whatever, are available in the game. And
Jack Frost.
Oh yeah. Jack Frost. Jack Frost, of course.
He's just my favorite. He's just my favorite. I just love
him. He's
so
cute.
I'm a big fan of Trumpeter. That's my favorite. But yeah, it does the post-apocalyptic landscape really, really well. And, you know, it's the music choice. And then I think one thing that I really like that I don't think existed in Persona 5, although they might have added it in Royal, is you can do a reverse fusion search that is based off of your compendium. So, you know, you get demons and then you register them so that you can summon them later when you don't have them. But basically this says, okay, instead of looking at what you have and what happens if you fuse it together, you can say, here's all the possible results of that you can make, not only with the demons on hand, but also any of the demons that you've ever encountered. So it makes it a lot easier to say, hey, I want to grab this thing, or, oh, this is something that I'd like to get. And that's super cool. There's these, they're not collectibles because you're really just finding them. It's kind of like the Koroks in Breath of the Wild, but they're called Meemoms, and they're these little tiny magma guys and girls and non-binary individuals, I guess, that you find, and you get this currency for them that lets you upgrade your character. So you like walk around and like look in buildings, like these collapsed buildings or behind cliffs and everything, and you'll find these little Meemoms, and they have, each one has one line of dialogue, but it's always something funny or silly. And the whole idea is that someone sent them out to find these relics from the human world because the apocalypse has happened, and they all just got sidetracked. Like, they were all supposed to be doing something, and then they just were like, oh, there's something shiny over there, and forgot what they're supposed to be doing. So you're finding them and sending them back. So it's
also like me in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. So I'm sure I got tons of time left in it, but it's good. I mean, if you played a Shin Megami Tensei game before, you know what to expect. If you played Persona, you kind of know what to expect. But it's been refreshing. It looks good. It's everything I hoped a new mainline entry would be. It's actually difficult. They have a kind of casual gameplay mode, so that if you want to go through on easy, you can do that and just see the story. But yeah, it's an actual challenge. So that's been pretty fun.
Nice. So I guess the only thing left is my number one.
Yeah.
And for that, it's a game. My number one for 2021. Shut up. my number one for 2021 is a game that came out early 2020. And that is Spiritfarer.
Oh yeah.
This is a game that, like Psychonauts 2, the reason it means a lot to me is because it really affected me, like, emotionally. Spiritfarer is a 2D management game where you have a boat in the afterlife. You have taken over the role of Spiritfarer.
You're Karen.
You are handed that off, and your goal is to find lost souls and to help them sort out their issues, and then you take them to the archway that basically sends them off to the ether to become nothing, right? Like, it is the true ending for them.
Right.
And so you find these spirits, and then they always manifest as like these animal creatures, and they live on your boat, and your boat is this giant boat that you can farm stuff on. You give them homes, you run and do quests. It's those kind of like, I love those kinds of games, right? Where you farm stuff and you do quests for people, all of that stuff. And the reason that this game means so much to me is, one, a game's never made me cry as much as Spiritfarer did.
Oh.
Because you grow attached to these characters, and they do it so well that when you are going and seeing them off to like say goodbye, the last thing they always do is they give you this big hug just before they leave. And it's like, God, I'm starting to feel emotional right now.
Oh.
And you hear their stories about not only what their life was before they died, but also like the life they've been living in the afterlife. And sometimes that's different. Sometimes people repeat things, you know, like it does this thing where all these people are given new opportunities here. And some people repeat it. Some people make things different. Some people make different choices. Right. But it's very human. It's very realistic. And there's so many things that are relatable, and there's still like one that sticks out to me. The way they just talk about losing people that are important to you. And there is, you know, like I said, every character you will go and they'll say like, I'm ready to go. And there was one character when they said like, I'm ready to go, I'm like, good, I don't like you. Get off my boat. But there's one character you meet that it's like, I don't want to spoil things, because like, this is a game I'd suggest. I want everybody to play this game. It's just, it's incredible. And it's just, there are so few games that are like this that can reach to you in a way, reach to a human side of you in a way that, like, it's not just it's a video game. Like, it's telling a story and you are actually, like, developing relationships with these characters. But there's one in particular that one day, like, you're doing a thing, there's this big feast that's going on, all of that. It just happens in the middle of the game. You're doing your normal stuff and they say, like, oh, we want to throw a party, all that. And then the very next day, he's just gone. And, like, he was one of my favorite ones. And when I was just trying to, like, look for him, like, constantly, and I was like, I'm wondering when he's going to pop up. And then it isn't until, like, the very end of the game you get a thing where, like, you see the remnants of all the people that you had met, and he was there. And so, like, it just hit me, like, real hard of the idea that, like, he was too afraid to say goodbye. And it made it even just worse in the end. But it's just, like, something that people can relate to those kind of things, right? Like, even when you're playing this, like, fantasy game with talking animals and all this stuff, they are telling these stories that are just so real. And none of these games did anything like that to me. And there's no other game that's done anything like that to me, necessarily. And so, like, this game has stuck with me all year. And I knew, like, this was going to be my favorite game that I played this year, for sure. Like, and I finished it in, like, February. But it is still just... everyone needs to play this game. Like, it's an experience that... Okay. You also just... You gotta be willing to open up, right? You gotta be willing to cry huddled over your Switch. But, It's that's Spearfare, and it's my favorite game of this year. So yeah, that wraps up our video games of 2021. We did BC wanted to bring up some albums from this year, and that sort of inspired us to be like, oh well, here, I'll bring up some movies. And then Brian wanted to bring up some podcasts. So
yeah,
BC, why don't you go ahead and kick us off? What are your top three albums of 2021?
Yeah, so these are, I think, yeah, they're all 2021 releases except for maybe one. But I tried not to pick anything that that would be like a major release. Like, everybody listened to Tyler the Creator this year. Everybody listened to Vince Staples this year. That sort of thing. But these are three albums that I listened to a lot this year and meant a lot to me. So the first one is called Head Fell Between Horses by Fourth Wife from Cincinnati. And it's just, imagine if Elvis Costello did post-rock, I guess is how I would describe it. But it's a...
Okay.
It's a fun, weird little romp. And it's got some... It goes from being super abstract to being super catchy. And I love it. And so, yeah, I spent a lot of time with that. And then there's
I wrote it down already because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, there is an album called Sinister Delay by Ivar Tryti, Ivar Tryti. I believe he's from maybe Norway. And if you enjoy video game music or like trip hop or anything like that, he does a lot of really cool stuff. He's an electronic music producer. And he mostly does things with these two small instruments called a digitact and a digitone. And he just does incredible things with these very minimalist electronic setup. And so I've been, every one of his releases is super good. And I've just been listening to that a lot this year. And then my third would be an album that came out in 2020. But I listened to it a lot this year, called Anime, Trauma, and Divorce by Open Mike Eagle.
Nice.
Open Mike Eagle.
I meant to email him.
What did you say?
I meant to email him.
Oh.
Because I was talking to him, like, briefly on when I found his podcast. That's a podcast I should have talked about, where it's like 11 hours of interviewing Prince Paul. And so I was like, holy spoopies, this is the best thing ever. So I meant to email him again, but yeah.
But yeah, Open Mike Eagle is a rapper from Chicago who has a very, you know, lyrical, witty style. He's super funny. He had a comedy show on Comedy Central called The New Negroes. But Anime Trauma and Divorce.
He's a huge They Might Be Giants fan.
Yeah, huge They Might Be Giants fan. So Anime Trauma and Divorce, he released, you know, after his life was kind of falling apart. He did get divorced. His show got canceled and a bunch of other stuff happened to him. And so just for me, and I think the entire world, the past 2 years, and for me especially this year, has been super, super rough and just dealing with a lot. So it was kind of nice to, you know, listen through this album that's just nerdy and goofy, but still deals with, you know, terrible things happening to you and terrible things happening in your life. And just how do you process that? So, yeah, those are my album recommendations.
Nice. So I've got three movies here that I think
I want to say thanks for showing me Genesis Owazu. That's like my favorite album of the year. Smiling with No Teeth. Absolutely love that album. I cannot stop listening to it. Like the whole year I've been listening to that thing. So yeah, thank you.
But yeah, I've got three movies here that I think are worth suggesting, that I think are great from this year. They all did come out this year. One of them was supposed to be out last year but got delayed because of everything, and that is Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. I don't know, yeah. Are either of you familiar with this?
Yeah, I didn't see it though.
So who else was in that one?
Vista Del Mar, is that California?
I don't know. But so this is with Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamolo, both SNL people. But it is absolutely absurd. Like, this movie, they did it intentionally with the trailers. They made them look like the most boring things ever. Mm-hmm. And it is just like, this movie is just insane, and it's absolutely hilarious all the way through. Like, it is just the dumbest stuff, and you just won't expect anything that it's going to do next. And it's imagine like a modern sort of, like, take what like Austin Powers was trying to do, or what Austin Powers was doing when it came out, but make it come out this year, but it actually is like, it's actually funny in 2021. But it is just that absurdist humor throughout the whole thing. It's one of the funniest movies I've seen in the last decade. It's so, so good. But you got to be open to that. It's a dumb movie, and it's absolutely hilarious. Another funny movie. This is actually a more family friendly one. Barb and Star, not a family friendly movie at all. a more family friendly one, animated one, Mitchells versus the Machines. This is by the studio that made the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
This is who was in this one? The two parents. It's about a family in an apocalypse that is happening, a robot apocalypse, and this is a family who is they are dysfunctional. Their youngest daughter, or their daughter, is ready to go off to college. Then the apocalypse happens, so she has to be stuck with her annoying family through all of this. But then it's just, you know, it's a lighthearted sort of thing to go through all this, that they get along, they do all this. But the humor, the writing is so good. They nail it throughout the whole thing. There's a few parts that make me feel real old, because they talk about certain songs about how this father and this daughter, like, oh, remember when we listened to this when you were kids, and it's like something with Rihanna, and I'm like, oh god, I remember this song, and this makes me feel old. But the parents are voiced by Danny McBride and Maya Rudolph, and they're great in it. It's really funny. There's good representation throughout it as well. It's just a great movie, and it's one that you can watch with anybody, really. And then the last movie that I have is Last Night in Soho. That's Edgar Wright's latest movie.
But he's one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, this is his first. Like, the thing is, so the first movie that he did that really everyone knew about was Shaun of the Dead, which people, like, they would call it a horror comedy. This one is almost more like a horror suspense kind of thing. It isn't really that funny throughout it, but it's just really good, and it keeps you guessing throughout the whole thing. It's acted incredibly well. The shots that he does, there's certain scenes that he does in there that are just... You've never seen anyone do anything like
He's masterful with the frame. Like, he knows how to pay attention to the frame. It's like watching a silent, like a Buster Keaton or a Charlie Chaplin thing, where, like, pay attention to the damn frame. Like, there are things you can do with that. There are interesting ways, like, especially with comedy movies. During his comedy movies, there are constantly funny things happening. Whereas it's not just, people sitting around talking, doing improv. You know, like, his movies look interesting. He edits things in a way that's funny. Like, he gets laughs out of editing. Like, I think he's great.
But the premise of it is that you basically have this this girl just got accepted to this fashion school in London, and she ends up, things go a certain way. She ends up at this old house, and then some, like, magical stuff kind of happens where she starts dreaming about this person from, like, 30 years ago, that it was just this, it's about this woman who was trying to make it as a star, and it's just her story, and she sort of gets trapped in her body, but is able to watch her at certain times. It's like, it does these weird shots, and it's really cool. There's this dance number in the middle of it where it keeps cutting between these two actresses doing the same dance with Matt Smith, and it's like, I blew my mind, where I was like, how did they do this? Like, just with the quick turn, with all of these other people in the shot doing all this dance stuff, like, suddenly this is a different person now. And it's just incredible. The sort of, like, twist at the end, I didn't see coming, but, like, you can tell they were, like, setting it up, like, thinking back on a lot of this stuff. The best, best kind of, like, you know, suspense thriller mystery kind of thing, is where, you know, when it happens, you're just like, whoa. But then if you rewatch, you're like, oh, they were giving me hints throughout this whole thing. But yeah, great movie. Good soundtrack. Of course, he also, like, you talk about his shot, like, Edgar Wright for me is always just knowing how to use music well.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, music, syncopated with, with me, like, there's the great scene with Don't Stop Me Now in Shaun of the Dead, but he does that all the time, where like, the music is part of the scene, and then, like, not in a diegetic way, like, not always, but yeah.
Opening a Baby Driver is still, like, so cool.
Yeah,
like, the choreography in that is really neat. Yeah, just get past Kevin Spacey.
I need to see it.
It's still a great movie.
I know.
Brian, let's close us out. This has been a long, long episode. What are some podcasts? Right.
Should we start with the video games and go into politics, or should we start with the politics and go into the video games?
This is your spot. You all ruin us however you like.
I'll start with the politics and go into the video games. The most politically charged thing, this is also a YouTube channel, but they also have a podcast, and their YouTube channel is now a podcast. It's on the feed. The biggest thing I picked up this year is Some More News. It's fantastic. It is very blunt and very real and very funny. And it's amazing, a lot of the stuff that I went to a very conservative school growing up, private Christian school growing up. But they wanted to be taken seriously. So I learned a lot about how things worked. And it's funny to see, like, these things that they talk about, and they're like, no, this is actually American history. And a lot of, like, we would talk about critical race theory and stuff like that. I learned about a lot of that crap growing up. They still pretended like it's okay to be a Republican, blah, 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 blah. All that stuff. So there's Some More News is just, like, it's reality, just, but it's funny. I came to it because I wanted to not forget the last 4 years, and so I was going through a lot of their back catalog, and they've blown up this year, and I don't know how to really explain my relationship with it. I think I messed it all up, it's really good. Cody Johnston's great. They started out as a Cracked show, just doing, you know, here's the news, and then the whole world went to hell in 2016, and it became more than that, and I guess they've been around for that long. I found them this year. It's a fantastic YouTube channel. It's, you know, you can also just listen to it as a podcast, but it's well-sourced. It's great. It's really great. I cannot recommend it enough. Moving slightly more away from that, Slow Burn has been around for a number of years. I think it's one of the best journalism podcasts. It's more of like a history podcast where they take each season is about one thing. Like the first season is Watergate. The second season is the Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, and how one small thing just slowly over time builds into this giant forest fire. And they usually do one episode a year. This year it was the Iraq War, with George W. Bush's presidency, and how that just became a nightmare by the end of it, and how it slowly built and how no one really did anything about it. And now they're doing two a year because they just started with the Rodney King police beating. And so, yeah, that's going to be this season, and it's going to be wild. It's an amazing show. The people who do the show, it's always someone different who is close to the material, who grew up in the story. It's always a different person who's hosting the season or something like that. But it's from Slate, so it's one of their journalists who's like, hey, I want to take a crack at this season of Slow Burn. Absolutely fantastic show. All their seasons are great. The last one, a lighter note, the Video Game History Hour. If you've heard of the Video Game History Foundation, that is, Jeremy, you might know Steve Lin. He gets brought up all the time. He's really good friends with Jeff Gerstmann. He gets brought up on the Bombcast all the time. Frank Cifaldi is the other founder of the Video Game History Foundation. They are an archival, like a private archival thing. But both of them are serious about collecting everything from video games to ephemera to old magazines, mailers, anything that has to do with video games. They will take it. They have found it. They have dug through paperwork to find it. Frank Cifaldi came around towards the end of the 1UP.com days. He was kind of like an editor at large, almost a freelancer at large at first, wrote some really great stuff for them. And then they hired him, and then, you know, you have to have a job. So his output sort of dropped off after a little while, but he's also fantastic. I've known him longer than I've known who Steve Lin is, but now Cifaldi, and someone else lead up a weekly podcast where they talk to someone about old stuff, and it could be something as like, hey, here's everything we found out about Space War, to hey, here's the guy who found every single MIDI file that Nintendo used originally on Super Mario World, and found the original files and remastered the entire soundtrack of Mario World, and here's how he went through and did it. It's fascinating. Listen to it. I listened to heavy stuff, so I talked about some heavy stuff, and yeah, life is crazy, and yeah, but there's video games. There you go.
All right. That wraps up our 2021. We hope you all had a good year. You know, it's been rough. It's been a rough last 2 years. But we hope that this is bringing you joy. We hope that us suffering through the Legend of Zelda animated series or playing some games that aren't amazing necessarily
or aren't finished,
we were able to find
aren't finished
yeah. Maybe,
but, you know, hey, knowing that I'm gonna get to talk about it with you guys always, it makes this past couple years better in some way, so there's that. I love you guys. I love our fans. I like talking to them, and I like interacting with them, and you guys are great. And so thanks. Thank you so much for, yeah, for, you know, giving us the thing to do.
Just another quick wrap up. If you hadn't seen, I'll be posting this on Twitter at some point, but just a scheduling sort of update with that. The first episode for the next season will be going up on February 2nd. We're going to be taking some time off and getting ahead of the game before it comes out. We're a little bit behind on that, and so we want to get a good buffer going there again. Joining us, Jonathan Dunn from the R3 Sense podcast. He'll be coming on for that season. Real fun guy. Hopefully you all like him. I'm sure you will. He's a fun Brit. It'll be nice to have him on here.
I like the show. I like the show a lot. It's, yeah, like three fens that tell dumb stories about being kids and arcades and their favorite games of all time, and it's fun.
Yeah. So he'll be joining us, and we're real glad that he's going to be here, and maybe it will make playing the next DS Zelda game good.
We can only hope.
But that wraps it up. Thank you, BC. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And thank you all, listeners, for spending...
Tiffy says thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Tiffy. And thank you all, listeners, for spending 2 hours letting us talk about the stuff that we like.
Yay! Whoop, whoop.